Thanks for checking out this CU Podcast special that we recorded live from Portland Retro Gaming Expo. Stick around afterwards for our coverage of the newly announced Analog 3D N64 FPGA system. I hope you enjoy.
Welcome everyone to the Portland Retro Gaming Expo 2023. It's Friday the 13th weekend. Alongside my pal, Ian Ferguson.
Hi.
Howdy. I'm Pat Concrete. Oh, wow. I should have known that was coming. I should have retired last year. I should have retired before my 15th year on YouTube this year. 15 years and 10 years of the CU Podcast.
That's right.
Because while we're here today, we're going to do a podcast. We've got 45 minutes of fun, 43 minutes. We'll be talking about some fun things, what we've been up to, a review of a certain independent game that was going to be an exclusive for a certain game console that's never going to come out.
That's right.
And an update on the WADA Games federal class action lawsuit.
Yeah! We love a little law.
People are like, yeah, law, judges.
We love a little law.
Subpoenas, depositions.
Document production.
So, Ian, what's been going on in your world?
I decided to take up bird watching last week.
Yeah, that's right. Are you hanging out with Frank doing that?
No. So I decided that I like birds.
Everyone likes birds. No one's like, I hate birds.
No. I did not like them for a long, long time.
Of course you
did. I didn't. I thought they were useless.
Useless?
Dumb and useless. They got in the way.
They kill all the mosquitoes and bugs and stuff, keep the ecosystem.
But by going to the San Diego Zoo, which has great aviaries, I've learned to enjoy them, particularly the asshole birds. The louder the bird is, the more annoying the bird is, the more I like it.
Yeah! Ow! Is that one of the bird calls you learned?
No.
Squawk!
So Amazon Prime Day, you know, Amazon's evil, but I found a pair of binoculars for okay. $17.
Needing two binoculars.
Two of them. And, so now I have binoculars and I look at the birds. And I don't intend on ever learning their names.
Oh, you gotta hang out with Frank then.
I don't want to learn the birds' names. I just want to say hey in the morning, go over to the slough, take a peek.
Sure.
A bird creeper.
I'm sure there's apps that can help you identify them if you want. Yeah. Or get some field guides. I have an extra, probably one or two. Frank has 50 of them. Yeah. I think you should learn a little bit.
Maybe I should.
Sure.
Maybe I do have a book on watching pigeons.
A book on watching pigeons.
An entire book on pigeons.
I feel like that should be a pamphlet.
Okay.
What have you been up to? What have I been doing? I've been finishing up a certain N64 guidebook. It's over a year overdue, but it's coming out. And so there's some paint samples here. A full page for each game. All 400 games, both the North American, European, and the Japanese exclusives, including the disc drive games, huh? Full reviews. There's a 64 Ozuna 2, that's the sumo wrestling game series. Banjo-Kazooie, you have the cartridge variants on there. I don't think you've seen some of this before. Here. So yeah, this is going to be for pre-order very soon this fall.
Look how nice.
At ultimatenintendo.com, and then I'll do a Kickstarter. There's Carmageddon 64, and yes, I reviewed Carmageddon 64 and played through it all several hours it took to finish that game.
That's favorite game.
Well, living the PC, Cruising USA, Donkey Kong 64, the variants there, with the nice color cards. So yeah, it's been a labor. I don't want to say of love, but it's been a labor.
I feel like I've been his therapist for it.
Oh, it's been fun. Virtual Pro Wrestling got four and a half stars by Dale Coolis. Dale reviewed all the pro wrestling games from the 64.
Is that Virtual Pro Wrestling 2?
Also, the first one got 4.5. Two got 5, I believe.
It should. Virtual Pro Wrestling 2 is like one of the finest wrestling games out there.
So there you go. So that's going to come out soon. You all excited about this? That's the Chrome variant. You're not supposed to see that. Chrome Special Edition variant. This is all unfinished, by the way, but this is kind of what it's going to look like. So that's. And then let's go to our first topic. what should I play here to get us in the mood? What'll be our first topic? Well, I'm playing the Amico deep dive video of Shark Shark here that friends Thomas Tallarico and the engineer John Alvarado showed us. This will be our... Ian,
this was my burden to bear.
Yes, it was. So
we decided that this was my burden.
A lot of those out there don't know that the Intellivision Amico was to be a modern console that sold you games between $3 and $8 originally.
$2.99 to $7.99.
And it was going to be no multiplayer, all local couch
co-op. No online multiplayer,
all couch co-op. And, you know, me and Ian, we'll just say we had some criticisms of it. We wished it luck, but we had some criticisms.
Some, a few.
And then a certain CEO probably came after us and threatened to, you know, maybe do things behind the scenes about me and then said to make me. And
play his spine like an accordion?
Yeah, and then, like, wanted to come over and have invite us to for pasta and things of that nature. By the way, this console was announced 5 years ago at this very convention.
It was.
Tommy was the keynote speaker and used that opportunity to promote a console that took in $17 million with almost nothing to show for it and built investors and pre-order folks who never got their pre-order deposits back. So one of our criticisms about these games was that why are these games exclusives? Why can't you play these games, I don't know, release them on the Xbox, Nintendo Switch, Steam?
We had a really gentle suggestion early on.
Gentle, very gentle. Maybe you can
maybe
play these games on the platforms.
We don't jump whole dick into the swimming pool and we release. That doesn't mean anything. I made those words up.
Okay.
Just right off the top of my head, I was like, that sounds good.
Whole dick
right in the swimming pool. So we suggested maybe we test the waters. And you just put some of these games out under the Intellivision name on, like, a Switch, the PC. That was impossible, Tommy said. You could not do it. These games could only be played with the Space Age Intellivision Amico controller.
I believe I used Astrosmith as an example publicly on Twitter, and Tommy clapped back, no, Pat, you don't, because he always put caps. No, Pat, you don't understand. These can only be played on the Intellivision Amico. Well!
That's a lie.
Years later,
fast forward,
$17 million wasted, all the employees laid off, these games are sitting somewhere, not just one, two, but three games from the same company that now owns the rights, BBG Entertainment in Europe. Two of them have come out, Shark Shark and Astro Smash, with Dyna Blaster on the way soon.
Yeah.
So Intellivision sold the rights to this game, Shark Shark, and Astro Smash, which are going to be... packing games, I believe, one of them at least is a new packing game. And there's physical products for both of these games, by the way, which of course does not give you access to playing these releases.
Because why would they? Very careful about putting on the back of the box.
They're not physical games. So I purchased these games as a keepsake.
Did you? I thought they were given to you.
Some were given, I bought purchased the others. So me paying $20 each does not give me access to these games. But Ian went and purchased and played Shark.
Here's what happened. These came out, and the initial buzz, the rumblings, put your ear to the grapevine. They said that the game was 35 minutes long, had 12 levels, was functioning. These are $15. $15 is what they're charging for these games.
$15!
That were originally supposed to be $2.99 to $7.99. Not quite $8. And I didn't want to spend the money on this. But then I remembered something very important, especially when we're talking about a 35-minute game. Steam lets you refund a game within 2 hours.
2 hours of playing.
So I strapped in.
Set your timer.
I lit one up, got myself a Diet Coke. And I set about the task of reviewing Shark Shark. It's bad. So, how can we say it? The general vibe, just when you see it, before we get into gameplay.
They see it on the screen.
It looks like one of those games that you would see in the background of a sitcom. One of those games that's not quite real. That someone is playing with a large controller that looks like an orb or something, because it took forever for TV to get video games even close to realistic. The art styles clash. You can see that they were going for a little bit of Finding Nemo with the clownfish, mm-hmm. but then you see the shark, and the shark looks like it's ripped right out of Shark Tale. It's bad.
So nothing matches.
Nothing matches. There is, later on in the game, there is like a stork that comes down, but like a stork face. And you know how SpongeBob...
By the way, spoilers anyone wants to purchase the place. Spoilers here. I'll make sure we... Spoilers.
Yeah, you see it all. It has a breadth to offer you in 20 minutes. You know SpongeBob SquarePants where they cut in like the realistic stuff? That's what it looks like. It's just completely out of place.
Sure.
The controls of the game, the controls that were only supposed to be doable.
It's
just analog. So the nature of the game is you start as a small fish, and you have to eat the smaller fish until you get bigger, and then you eat the bigger fish, all while avoiding the titular shark.
Shark, there's a eel that went by.
You have to just eat enough fish to fill up a meter, and then you move on to the next level.
That's it.
There is, you know, some scoring elements. You'll see three shells at the bottom, and they randomly open and have either an extra life pearl, a gold pearl, or a silver pearl, which is worth less. This was part of what Tommy said made the game only playable on the... You see right there, timing is perfect. On the screen, it was supposed to show you which shell was going to open next.
Based on the color on the controller.
While playing this masterpiece of a game, I realized that was a horrible, horrible idea, and actually would have made the game far, far worse.
Sure.
Because everyone would just be waiting around for this thing, and then they'd all rush towards it. There's no strategy involved. It would make it worse.
Camping the shells, basically.
Yeah, exactly. You just camp.
Shell camp.
Sounds so bad. The shark has pretty easy AI to trick, but it's very slow and boring. And basically what happens is, here's how the game goes. Little fish, eat, eat, eat. Now here's the shark. Do slow circles around the shark for about 30 seconds until the shark disappears. Eat some more. If you die, you become a small fish again.
Okay.
So what happens is it's really slow and boring, especially in one player. It may play slightly better in multiple players where the shark isn't just going...
Can't you nip the shark's tail and it'll
turn
around?
You can nip the shark's tail, but it doesn't get rid of it. That would have been a game design decision that makes sense.
Nip it a few times.
Nip it, and then it goes away, so you can keep eating the fish. There are three themes. There's pirate, coral, and I can't remember the last one. Oh, this is what I was going to get to.
The ink of the screen.
And they just keep adding these little things. So it starts with the shark. Then you get an electric eel that'll come by. Then you'll get the stupid bird. And then you get these ink splotches, and that's about where I gave up on the game. I think it was around level 9 out of 12. Randomly, they just start ink splotches at the screen. You're just playing the game, and boom, ink on the screen. Okay. Here's how we're going to make the game more fun and challenging. We're just going to take away your visibility every 5 to 15 seconds.
I thought it was like an octopus or squid that did something. You're saying it just happens.
Maybe, but I think it just happens. And either way, that's how it affects the gameplay. There's nothing you can do to make
something. Something fired something.
Right.
Was it from the background? What was that?
Yeah.
Okay.
But there's nothing you can do to make it stop.
Okay.
It is
an octopus, but it is random. Gotcha.
There is no skill involved. You are just punished constantly by this ink.
So they ran out of ideas by level 9, basically.
Yes. I did not beat the game. I'm sorry. I had seen enough. I had seen enough.
Not dedicated, Ian.
Well, here's the thing. You only have 2 hours, right? I did not want to be stuck.
2 hours of gameplay time or 2 hours in real time?
2 hours of gameplay. Two hours of gameplay time.
Okay.
When I refunded the game, I thought I had been playing for maybe an hour and 15 minutes. I had been playing for 19 minutes. One night.
Wow.
So 19 minutes felt like an hour.
So you're saying you got your money's worth, maybe.
Oh, yeah, I did. real bang for your buck. They really condensed the fun.
So, Ian, would you recommend Shark Shark? Yeah. First of all, at $15, would you recommend it?
No, sir.
Would you recommend it at $10?
No, sir.
How about $7.99?
No, sir.
How about $4.99? No. $2.99? No. The minimum original? No.
No.
How does this compare to like Feeding Frenzy from like 15, 20 years ago?
Not good. Not good.
Has it been an improvement?
It doesn't look good.
So graphically, it's a mess.
There's no animation when you eat the fish. They just disappear.
Are the controls the least decent?
They're slow. There's no dash button. A game like this needs a dash button. There's no mechanic. Like, you literally just...
No dash meter to get away from a shark real quick? Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And it was clearly, I believe, tuned for multiplayer. I mean, I do believe that this was meant to be a multiplayer game because playing it solo sucks. When you die, you have to float around as a skeleton fish for like 5 to 10 seconds.
Really?
Because in multiplayer, that's supposed to be your punishment. You get eaten and you get turned into a ghost fish for a little bit so that you can't get points.
The other player get more points. Gotcha.
But they keep it in the single player mode. So not only do you die, but then you have to swim around as
punishment.
As skeleton boy.
And then eat away your 2 hours of steam time, basically. Yeah. So here's the best part about Shark Shark. And Television Entertainment didn't pay to develop this. This is one of the several games that was funded under that Bavarian Arts Entertainment German grant we talked about.
And I have something interesting.
As were about 3 or 4 other games from like the original run, games like Moon Patrol, I think Astro Smash, I'm not positive, Biplanes, Skiing definitely was. So they get this game, German taxpayers pay for its development. They use it to get investors to pay in who never see a return, and they get people to pre-order a console, and then they turn around and tell them, sell the rights to the game.
Yep. They sold the rights to the
game. So they got all this money, and they didn't even pay to make this game, which was probably made by college kids right out of high school.
Well, so here's the interesting thing. The first thing I did before I even started playing the game was I had to check the credits. I had to see what names were in the credits. I had to see if Tommy Tallarico or someone was in the credits there. He was not. There's zero mention of Tommy Tallarico in the credits of Shark Shark. The other thing that is interesting to me, and it's just interesting, man, I don't know if it means anything, but this is a game that was paid for with German grants, and when you go through the credits, all the last names are suspiciously Russian.
So they hired them out, the cheapest possible that they can get, maybe.
Right. So I don't know. I mean, was it even developed in Germany?
International controversy here. International incident. So it's interesting how this was advertised. I think I have the page ready to go about how it was advertised. Oh, here's advertised on Switch. Inspired by the original version. And then you scroll down, the original version. Let's focus on this last line here. You said Tommy was not mentioned anywhere in the game, but he's advertised. Superb sounds compiled and designed by famous game music composer Tommy Tallarico.
And this is like the classic like wiggle words he uses because it's all stock music.
Tommy Tallarico has won over 35 industry awards, no fact check, and has worked on over 300 game titles, which we know is false at this point.
And so the compiled and what was it, designed?
He says superb sounds compiled and designed.
You'll notice not composed, because it's all stock music. It's all stock music. The words compiled, yeah, you downloaded it, you picked it, you designed it, you chose which levels to put it in. If that.
So just all the bare minimum effort on a game we could even pay to design, to try to get people on board for investment and for, you know, to get pre-order money.
Some real horse hockey.
Ian, thank you for, give it up for Ian for putting the time to do this.
I swear to God, it felt like an eternity.
Okay, out of 10, what's your IGN score out of 10? Honestly. Based upon what it cost, the fun you had. Too much butter.
I mean, it functions, we'll give it a 2.
A 2?
3.
2 out of 10. 3! 3 out of 10.
I just feel like there's way more you can do with that $15.
Oh, yeah, you can get a couple burritos.
And a taco.
Yeah, absolutely.
Taco Bell.
anything. You can probably find like 3 or 4 good indie games for $15.
No, that's my exact point. I mean, there's better free games, lots of better
with
free
more
games
heart and soul, with probably people that came up with original ideas, not a retread of a 40-year-old game.
Have any of you seen Moonring? The game that just came out on Steam. It's made by one of the ex-developers of Fable. It's like an Ultima-type game. It's 100% free, and it's huge. And it's just a labor of love, and the guy did not charge anything for it.
And this was not a labor of love.
No, this was not a labor of love. Someone shit in a bag and called it a game.
All right, this is a PG-13.
It's not. It never has been, and never will be.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
All right, Ian, we are here at Portland Retro Gaming Expo.
We are.
And Chief Pop, interesting that we had a few years off between 2019 and it came back in 2022. A lot happened in the game collecting community in that time, including, where are we going here? Astro Smash, Shark. This is a WADA thing, so we're talking about WADA. WADA Games. We're going to talk about WADA Games. I don't have a logo here. Before we get to the topic, WADA is here. Please don't bother them. Don't harass them. Those are employees that have nothing to do with what we're going to talk about. They're just
Collectors University.
Yes, they're the parent company. So WADA Games, as we know, was founded around late 17, early 18, and there's been shenanigans that have happened since then.
Tomfoolery?
There's been tomfoolery. There's been allegations of some really weird things happening. Weird relationships between the founders, knowing Jim Halperin, who runs Heritage Auctions, and having an exclusive deal to only auction off those games and not BGA graded games, all weird stuff. We've gone through it over the years. Carl Jost did a great video expose about it a couple years ago. It all came to crescendo in July of 2021, when for some reason a sealed Mario 64 sold for $1.5 million. Right after that, Collectors Universe bought WADA Games, and then all hell broke loose because people were wondering what's going on. Fast forward, a federal class action lawsuit was filed on behalf of people that use WADA to create their games. That was, I think, July of last year. And now we have an update, Robert Stack update, on the class action lawsuit. There are certain things we can share with you about the lawsuit, what's happening.
Many things have come to light. There's a lot of facets, a lot of ins, a lot of outs.
So what happened earlier in the summer was important. The defense, which is Collectors Universe / WADA Games, they filed a motion to dismiss at least some of the claims. So what are the claims going on in this lawsuit? There's contract, which is pretty much cut and dry. The contract claims are, well, you claimed on your website and all the dealings that if customers and clients pay to get your games graded, they get them back in the time that you advertised, whether it was a month, 2 months, 3 months. The problem was they were such a backlog that some folks didn't get their games back for well over a year, right, or couldn't find out where their games were at. So obviously that's problematic because you're taking people's money and providing a service. But then a lot of people got this stuff graded to try to cash it on the market, probably, to get in early and get their stuff graded and put up for sale.
No offense, but I mean, you'll see evidence of that as you walk around the floor. There's a lot of people with graded games that don't seem to be moving.
So that was the other half. The other half that we reported in the past is the juicier stuff, some of the stuff we have talked about, some of the alleged stuff. The other part is fraud and RICO.
Ricola.
So, Ian, do you know what RICO is? I can explain that.
Go for it. I know what it is, but you can...
Okay, I don't know as much as you, that's why I asked you. So, RICO is racketeering something criminal organization, correct? Mm-hmm. What's the I?
That I don't remember.
Okay.
I know it is RICO.
Okay.
I'm not on a first-name basis.
So, more easier, what is racketeering? Racketeering is the formation or use of a company to commit fraud.
Yes.
That is racketeering. That's why it was here. The mob would get dinged for racketeering because maybe they would, you know, create an olive oil company like in The Godfather, or a construction company that made millions of dollars where they should have.
Fronts.
So that's the other portion of the lawsuit. So when Ian and I first discussed this, we were like, well, the contract stuff is pretty cut and dry. That's going to go forward. And we were like, RICO and racketeering, probably not.
RICO is really difficult to make stick.
Sure.
I mean, it's kind of a joke when people say, oh, is this the RICO? Are we going to finally get the RICO? No, you never do.
Because you have to prove intent, and right. Besides all these relationships that are together. So what happened was, Collectors Universe filed a motion to dismiss for everything, which is common in civil lawsuits. The judge, though, allowed everything to move forward, not just the contract claims, but RICO and racketeering.
That's really unexpected. I did not in a million years think that was going to happen.
Which means the judge at that point, from what he had seen and through discovery and, I guess, depositions, thinks there's something to it.
And me as a clerical law worker, that's almost a lawyer.
I think you revealed that before.
I have a fine-tuned sense of this. And I think they're going to get taken to the cleaners.
Well, we have some, okay, RICO is Racketeer Influence and Corrupt Organizations Act. Influence. That's what RICO means. So, I just had it open, I just lost it, my Google Docs. So this is what's going to happen. In December, by December 11th, this is all procedural stuff, this is all public. By December 11th, the motion for summary judgment that the defense will file, that will be given to the judge, will probably say, no, this is going to move forward. And the class certification for the prosecution has to be put in. What is class certification? You probably know that better than me.
I do know summary judgment, though.
Okay.
Summary judgment is basically what someone will ask for to eliminate the steps that go forward in terms of discovery and things like that.
Sure.
So it's an easy way out to just be like, please just make a ruling on this case without it going to not necessarily a court, but mediation or things like that. So it gets it all the way quicker.
Sure. And obviously you want them to file, the feds to be like, okay, this is nothing, throw it out. That's why you want to file it.
Right.
So class certification. So you this is class action means you're a class of people. You're all together in one group, which makes it easier for plaintiffs to sue because they don't have to hire a lawyer and go after you. That's why obviously a big organization does not want a class to be certified. Because individuals do not have the money to sue a big multi-million dollar corporation. So the class certification happening is super important, that they all stick together and can have one law firm represent them. That's very important. So what is going to go forward, though, or what at this point? Consumer protection claims, unfair competition laws, which means, you know, I'm guessing is some of this. That probably means that it was probably unfair that, like, Heritage Auctions only had an agreement, a monopoly with a lot of games. That seems unnatural. That seems unfair. Then you're basically promoting each other because remember, the founder of Heritage Auctions, Jim Halperin, was also a founding board member of Wanna Games. That was public for a while.
And we've already been in trouble for coins in the past.
Yeah, the feds dinged him for weird practices in the 80s when it came to coins. So that's happening, like we said before. So fraud is going forward. And then non-disclosure claim, which we're not sure about, and contract claims. That's all moving forward with WADA. What came out also, this is public, this was found. Jim Halpern, who we just mentioned, he has a charity set up, which happens, people set up 501c3s, some rich people do it. It was found out that after the Collectors Universe sale went through, money was put into the Jim and Gail Halpern Foundation. They're 501c3. I think it was between, I believe, around $250,000 was put into their 501c because all the tax returns and 501c3s are public. You can all look them up right now. So it's not necessarily they were trying to hide the sale, but it's still strange to do that.
Divest the funds a bit.
So Jim was paid out because he was a founding member of WADA Games. It was also coming out that in the fall of 2021, Heritage Auctions was upset at WADA for not being able to supply a sufficient amount of product for their auctions. That's how close the relationship was. going back and forth. Hey, were you going to have a certain amount of games for us? What do we have to expect this? So they were on apparently...
like a jilted lover, big sad about a lack of attention.
So they're apparently on some sort of schedule tightly knit between these two organizations.
Yes, they were clearly working hand in hand. Yes. Beyond just what was on the face.
So that's another big one. Dennis Kahn, who was the president of WADA Games, sometime after the sale of the Collector's Universe, we probably found out what is going on. Maybe we bought into something that maybe on its surface wasn't what we think it was. He has been demoted and shuffled to the side. I think it's like special acquisition or special interest. So it would look terrible if Collector's Universe bought WADA Games and then fired the president. They can't do that, especially with a class action lawsuit.
Right.
But you're going to step down and we'll keep you on the payroll and just sit in the corner and do nothing. Dennis Kahn has already been deposed in this lawsuit. He's already been grilled. And we'll see what comes out of that, because eventually that information becomes public.
A lot of stuff.
And hopefully the video will as well.
Oh, the video?
I don't know about that.
So,
that'll be fun.
So Dennis was shuffled away. And this is an interesting thing that we never really touched upon. Where, did anybody in the audience know where the name WADA comes from for WADA Games?
No, we do.
We have one or two people. We never commented on this,
and it always rubbed me the wrong way.
And they took it off their website.
Yes.
What's in the name? Oh. Inspiration for our name,
yep.
WADA.
And they took this off their website because they knew it was a bad look, but they kept the name.
Yeah. Be like water, yes. Making its way through cracks. Be water, my friend. This is a famous thing. He said this on one of his guest appearances in the early 70s. Also did an interview on YouTube. So their name comes from... I think it's Cantonese. A Cantonese accent.
So they couldn't just say water. They decided they had to try to mimic the accent of Bruce Lee.
It's just not cool to do that.
At all?
And I think I forgot about it, to be honest. I think I honestly forgot about that. Because it's just like not something you would want to do.
No.
Like, why would you want to do that? Even if your intentions were good, it's just weird and insensitive to do that. So, but you know what's interesting, Ian? While I was going on the Wayback Machine and seeing that, I looked down on the board of directors that used to be on the website. And I found something very interesting here, which goes back to maybe something that we can guess about maybe something in the future. For collectors, by collectors, sure. The executive team, there's good old Dennis here. There's Mark Haskell, the individual that I witnessed buying games at Too Many Games 2019. I brought it up in the law, in the Carl Jobs' video. Something they said would never happen, by the way.
Oh, yeah. No.
But he was buying and selling games. He sold a bunch of games to Seth Averson, the reporter, report on this. I scroll down. There's the little Dennis Kahn. There's some folks. There's good old Jim Halperin. Who's this individual, you might ask? Dan Maresca. Dan Maresca was a big sealed game collector. I used to argue with Dan Maresca. His online moniker is Bronte.
You argue with someone?
Yeah. On a 4 on a 10 of inch. My favorite website. I used to argue with Dan a lot about, because he was a big still a game collector. He was down to only one or two he needed. This is like 2010, 2009, 2011. We used to get into arguments a lot of times. So the reason I bring up this individual and spotlight them is because you remember, Ian, what kicked off way back in early 2019, what kicked off, what sale kicked all this off? We're like, wow, this is the new high mark of any video game seller.
Mario, $100,000.
The $100,000 NES, I think it was the second printing, gloss sticker, Super Mario Brothers.
Bring it all home, Pat.
And at the time, it was unknown who the seller was.
Oh, not anymore.
Guess who was the seller of the Super Mario Brothers that sold the game to this individual? Where's Jim?
You passed him. You got him.
This individual sold the game, one of the buyers, to someone who found WADA Games and was the founder of Heritage Auctions. It was this fellow who owned the Super Mario Brothers.
Inside business.
Why do you think they never wanted to publicize who sold the games? Or who sold the game? Because it would look skeezy, unethical, and maybe, in my opinion, fraudulent.
this is a totally natural sale.
If this was known,
there's nothing to see here.
We didn't know this back then. Carl Jobst didn't know this when he did his big expose video a couple of years ago. Do you think this would have got people talking? Do you see how these relationships, there might be something going on here?
Yeah.
And then that sale, remember, then through Richard Lecce, who was one of the three individuals we knew at the time that purchased it, which maybe something else was going on, we'll see. That was the one that went on Pawn Stars later in 2019. So it went from the most expensive thing before that, I believe, was a Seal Stadium event, around $30,000-$35,000. Then they jump it up. They, in my opinion, manufacture manufacture a sale for PR reasons, which got out. All these websites did articles. People on YouTube were doing videos about this new sale. The new high, they went from $35,000 to $100,000 to later in the year. I think it's worth $1 million, maybe. That's what I want on Pawn Stars. And Dennis Kahn then says, this, you know, in articles and on the show, well, the sky's the limit with these games. This all happened in less than a year. $35,000, the most expensive game, to might be $1 million, might be several hundred thousand. All, in my opinion, manufactured. Here's the thing about civil lawsuits, Ian. When you do discovery, what happens?
I mean, everything comes up.
You can get records of email communications. You can get...
That's what I do. Discovery is very, very interesting. You literally get everything. They just drop proverbial at this point, but boxes and boxes and boxes of documents. You don't ever want to go...
Through discovery.
Through discovery, unless you are 100% fucking sure. You are squeaky clean.
So here's the thing. I can't say for sure... But we have misrepresentation as one of the claims going forward. We have a fraud. We have all these things that I'm not saying it's going to come out in discovery. But what if in discovery, some of this information comes out between, hey, what were these people saying to each other? What agreement did they have? When did they have the agreements between Dan Maresca, between Jim Halperin, Richard Lecce, and Dennis Kahn, and any other buyers that were there? Because they put out a press release saying there were three buyers and it was all legit, and
look, they'll get that. They'll get that. I mean, one of the main things you get these days is electronic communication. You will get literally every email.
So if it comes out, I'm not saying it will, but if it comes out, there were shenanigans going on. We will learn then potentially that the spark that lit this fuse of this speculative, in my opinion, bullshit graded game bubble was all built on a fraudulent purchase back in 2019 with a $100,000 sale.
There you go.
Can't say it for sure, but it looks weird. Tell me what I'm telling lies.
All right, how's everyone doing?
How's everyone doing? We have about 7, 8, 9 minutes for Q&A. About anything we're having up to, about if you should, you know, wash your rice before you boil it.
You should.
Future N64 books, whatever. Yes, sir, the beard.
Is this what we call investing in television?
Investing in television? Is there anyone here that did not get that joke when they watched that video? Sure. Thank you.
Is there going to be another episode at all of Petty Pat?
Another episode of Petty Pat? I don't know. People have come out and done smear videos, try to attack me. It's almost like I don't want to give them too much, you know, credit or too much shine.
I just don't sit around in the poison, man. It's not worth it.
I think the people that I took out were worth taking out. One of them had been a long time coming. You know, I did understand the in television joke that Frank said. So we'll see. If you enjoy Petty Pat?
Yeah, I loved it.
You love the jingle? I'm good at jingles.
Ian,
my mom.
Ian,
what's up?
Last meal, next meal.
Okay, so last meal, next meal. Last meal was Thai food. I ordered it late last night. I did not do well at eating. I wish I could remember where it was from. I got Sam Tham, which is the spicy green papaya salad. I got it as hot as I possibly could, and it makes me happy every time. It's cold, it's sweet, it's tangy, it burns your face. It's incredible. I also got chicken satay, and I got one of the all-time greats in terms of food, crab meat rangoon. Next meal, I'm going to a place called Slow Bar, and I think I'm going to have steak frites.
Oh, yes, in the hat.
So I was wondering, after you publish the N64 guide, if you were going to continue on with other consoles, because as you know, N64 gets a lot more complicated past to keep going on. Are you going to be like, do you see yourself in like 7 years doing like Wii U?
Ian, for my mental health and my life support,
I'm not letting Pat do another book ever again. He's, because I can't take it. He's done.
That's fair. Yes. Quick tale from the GameCon. Last night I overheard someone at dinner telling his friend about the Polymega. He thinks it's the best thing ever, but he couldn't remember the name.
That's actually funny.
That's hilarious.
He took out his phone, and he asked his phone, what do all retro gamers want? He scrolled a little bit, and he said, oh, polyamory. That's what it is. My question is this: you're releasing a console called the Polyamory. What three games do you
put on it? Jesus. We liked your vibe. That's one. At the end of the bar, I don't know. Pineapples is something else that swingers do. They love pineapples.
Full dick in the pool.
Full dick in the pool. Yeah,
we want the end.
Yeah. Bomber Guys, Tommy Tallarico video came out and like blew up. As someone who had been sort of following it really closely through you guys for like 5 years, it was really trippy seeing like sort of less nerdy people like become aware.
Sure.
Yeah, wider audience for sure. Yeah, it's interesting.
The Bomber Guys stuff was interesting because I think he was aware of our stuff. He was in our chat when we premiered our response to that video. And so it was nice to see someone with a much bigger reach, like Carl Jobs, the same thing with the WADA. It's not that it's like recognition, but the message has to get out there whatever way. And it was great to see that. And he was too nice on him, knowing that we know now that it's come out that Tommy did almost none of the soundtracks he took credit for. Before, he should have kept his mouth shut, because then people would be like, oh, he worked on Earthworm Jim at least, and Terminator, you know, Sega CD, and they'd be like, no, he didn't really do that stuff either. Like, other people did some of that work, and it was just like, oh, it gets worse and worse and worse.
According to the nice lady in the back, I think we have time for two more.
We got 3 minutes left. Yes?
So with this WADA Games thing, what do you think that's going to do to the speculation market as far as purchasing games going forward?
The bubble's already burst. We've talked on the podcast. There's some games that have lost hundreds of thousands of dollars. The Tecmo Bowl we covered a couple months ago on one of our specials went from $144 to $5,000 in like a year and a half.
And like I said, those games are all over the floor right now, and I've seen no one picking them up or interested in them at all. Someone had a NBA Jam TE 9.8 for Sega Genesis, and it's like, I am so sorry you're saddled with that, but you're never getting rid of it.
The person that harassed me last year while I was setting up my booth, I don't think probably here this year. They were a big speculative buyer and said, you're wrong. It's just a correction in the market. They probably lost $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 probably in this market. If I had to guess, I might be low.
The only reason people get this angry about stuff is because they're losing money and they're trying to pretend they're not losing money.
Good time for a couple more questions, I think. Yes, all in them back there.
Do you guys still receive any voicemails from Tommy
Tallarico? We do not receive voicemails from Tommy Tallarico. All right. And the hat back there.
For Ian, could you recommend two affordable top-down schmucks for the Saturn?
Two affordable
Saturn. Oh, Jesus. Affordable? No, I'm sorry. I don't think I can, and I mean that realistically. That's more my wife's venue. She loves the Saturn, and I wish I could give you an answer because I love that question, but I just don't think they're really... I mean, at this point, Radiant Silver Gun is probably affordable compared to most of them, and that's a fun one. I feel like that game's always $200, and at this point, a Saturn game that's only $200 that you want to play, you might as well go for it.
Oh, one or two more. Yes?
Maybe this would be more towards Ian, but is there a possibility of a Game Boy guidebook?
So, there will not be a Game Boy guidebook. However, I do... my friend Rick and I kind of do a Game Boy of the Month thing, Game Boy Game of the Month thing called Yokoi Kids. We've been doing it for many years.
Yeah.
We did a Volume 1 zine, which I feel like zine's kind of a silly name because it was thick. We did that, and it was for charity. And we're working on a volume 2 now.
Okay. Is that like on like a website? Is that on the Ultimate?
No, we'll announce it when we do it.
Okay.
Like, we're in production of it right now. We're getting the articles and the art and everything together. We're pretty close.
One last question. Yes, in the Triforce shirt. Sorry, let's love the shirt.
No, this is
big. Yeah.
So would you consider ever doing another book, video game or not console?
I want to do something in the future. I'd rather do fiction. Nonfiction is hell. Because nonfiction, I guess the whole game is try to screw up as little as possible in nonfiction, because it's facts. And it's just like, it's a little bit too much for me anymore to try to deal with. And I try to do the best I can. That's why these books take years to do. I don't just shit them out, as Ian would say.
In a bag. Shit them in a bag.
So that's why this might be the last one. I might do a second revision or a second edition of the NES book, because that's going to sell out again, the third printing, so I might clean that up. But
I'll let you do second, like,
you'll
revisions.
Let me do that?
I'll let you do revisions, but then you get right into romance, all right?
Romance, I was all right. And this romance will continue maybe for a little longer. Thanks, everyone, for coming out to the Portland Retro Gaming Expo.
So, Ian, we had a great time at Portland Retro Gaming Expo this past weekend. We talked about the update. Update on the WADA class action lawsuit. We also spoke about your great review of Shark.
Yes.
The exclusive Amico game that's not exclusive. And so we come back, we come back home, and then we see an announcement. Out of nowhere, like an RKO, the Analog 3D, an FPGA N64 console, has been announced by Analog, says coming in 2024. Almost hit us like remember when the first emulator came out in, what was that, like 99 or so, or 2000?
Yeah, probably about
the HLE emulator that came out, and it was like, people were like, wow, this is out of nowhere. And this sort of hit the same way. We had always talked about how terrible in terms of accuracy, in terms of how things look, how it's represented, the N64 emulation can be for some of the games. And while there's been big strides made in the emulator scene, the issues were always the fact that the lesser known games always were giving short change, because you want to focus on the ones people are playing. And the fact that you need a really robust, powerful PC with a good graphics card in order to get the games to look like they did closer to it on the original hardware.
Right.
So an FPGA would be like the godsend to some of us, especially if, for modern TVs, because then you're getting, low latency. You are getting the ability to play these on an LCD TV and not have them look like trash. And also get all the benefits. So what was your initial takeaway? You saw the announcement.
Well, I mean, my takeaway is that on a technical level, it's great to see this. People always, I think the announcement, there was a talk with the owner of the company, or the founder, and basically he said, this is the one that nobody thought was possible. And I always thought it was kind of possible. I mean, with FPGA technology, you would be able to do it, but it would be a long road. And Christopher Tabor, the founder, did say that it took them, they had been working on it for the last 3 years, which feels like a long amount of time. And I'm sure most of that, is the core. I also felt relief. I felt a lot of relief, a big, huge sense of relief, because I don't want this. I have no desire to own this. So it's the first time in a while that Analog has made something that I don't want. So I think it's great. I think it's really cool for the people who do want it. I think it's probably going to sell like fucking gangbusters for them. I'm just happy that after a run of you know, FPGA Genesis, FPGA Game Boy, Game Boy Advance Color, and other stuff, and FPGA, you know, PC Engine, we're finally on another system that I don't want. So that's great. That's wonderful. Saves me money.
So he's thinking just selfishly, I don't need to buy this, so that's good. Okay.
Yeah, that's good. So I'm happy in two ways. I'm happy for the people who do want this, and I'm happy that I don't want this, and I can keep the money in my pocket.
Sure.
And it's no offense. I don't like the N64 enough to ever make use of something like this appropriately.
So this is announced with wireless Bluetooth and 2.4G. There's an image of the controller, the purported
Go
controller. Well, it's been lightened with people. You can find a lightened image of that. We'll get to that in a second. Four original style controller ports. That's one of the reasons I really like the analog consoles, because they give you original ports. You're not forced to just use USB or something proprietary.
Yeah, sometimes they just put them in really fucking weird places, like on the Analog Duo.
Well, maybe once we'll get to the announcement when that's coming out. Completely engineered in FPGA, analog OS, no emulation, meaning no software emulation, because it's FPGA. So you're trying to get close to as possible with modern, you know, hardware and chips to the original. You're writing it on a very, you know, very, very lower level in terms of hardware, so that basically all the pros and cons of the original hardware are exactly, in theory, will be exactly the same if it's written well, the FPGA. And with the track record of analog between the Mini NT and the Mega SG, which you own, the Super NT, and of course the Pocket that we both gloat about, you know, you would think, due to the track record, it would be the same level of quality.
So I don't think, and this isn't meant to like sound like I'm blowing them, but I don't think Analog would announce this and release it if they weren't pretty fucking confident in it.
Correct.
I mean, there's a reason, like everyone talks about how this one, it would be hard. You know, I guess some people, you know, did say it wouldn't be possible, or it wouldn't be possible without, you know, a lot of effort or errors. I don't think they want to risk looking bad. And I don't think the people who are behind the actual FPGA portion of it would release a product that they were not extremely happy with.
People can bitch about not liking Analog's release schedule or the pre-orders.
I do all the time.
Or their marketing. But their final products are the best products in terms of what you are getting versus the bang for the buck, in my opinion.
I disagree with a lot of stuff they do, but I mean, I've never been shy about this. I've always been extremely happy with any of their products that I've ended up with that I have used. I love my Pocket. I love my Pocket so much that I haven't even hacked it yet, and it's not that I'm against that. It's just I haven't needed to. I bought it to play my cartridge games on a beautiful screen, and it does that flawlessly. I loved my Mega SG. I've played the Analog Super NT. You know, I just... Yeah, it's when you get it in your hands, you kind of forget the bullshit and you're like, yeah, this is a quality product.
So this is the marketing, a reimagining of the N64, 4K resolution, original display modes.
I wanted to bring this up because our buddy, I think it was Daniel Greenberg who said this, and if it wasn't, then my bad. But someone was like, you know, this is neat, but the N64, and I do agree with this a little bit, the N64 is one of those systems that has benefited more than lost with emulation. You know, people talk about inaccuracies with emulation and things like that, but it's the extra stuff, the graphical things you can do, the frame rate things you can do with the N64 and emulation have been beneficial, especially with a system that's as old as it is and was always kind of in a weird spot graphically, with draw distances and all that. However, original display modes, much like the Pocket, means that they have probably acknowledged this, and there probably will be modes that at least affect the output quality.
Yeah, because that's the one thing, one of the issues when doing the book was the fact that you needed these computer and GPU intensive filters to make them look like the original hardware, because if not, it looks like just any standard computer game, you know, that came out in the late '90s where the angles are too angular. It looks too clean. You lose the original intent of the artwork by having it look too clean and nice.
Yeah. This is going to be a system that, you know, and I'm sure they're doing it, but really put some effort into the scan lines and the CRT type filter because the 64 just does not look right without that to kind of hide it and dither the polygons and stuff like
sure.
that.
So original display modes, so that I'm happy about that, and reference quality requisite recreations or representations of specific model CRTs and PVMs. So there's going to be, I guess, a layer on top where it's like, okay, now we're going to pretend you have this CRT, and then so that's pretty cool. And they had these on the other consoles as well, as we know. That's sort of like you can pretend you're playing it on a CRT or scan lines. The first and only aftermarket solution supporting 100% compatibility in every region, USA, Europe, and Japan. That's great. Coming
into to be seen, but again, we don't necessarily have any reason to doubt what they're saying here.
They haven't let us down yet in terms of that stuff. And coming in 2024. Okay, so it's exciting. As someone who's gone through heck of putting together this new guidebook, and now that I'm a lot more familiar with the overall library, obviously I'm in the market for this. I own games, and I also have the flash cart, so I'm in for that, obviously. So the controller they showed, if you see a lightened up version, it's practically a Switch Pro controller, except that it has only, I think, the one analog, because N64 only has one analog, and it has, the top four buttons have the arrows on them. So it's six button layout. It's closer to the layout versus obviously Switch Pro. It's closer to an N64 controller button layout versus a Switch Pro controller. So unfortunately, though, it doesn't have the tri-wing, which means that you would be unable to easily play some of the games, because the reason why there's three different, wings on N64 controller, because you want to hold it for using the D-pad mainly or the analog. So that's why it's like, well, your two hands are moving left or right. Or
I did grab, because it looks like that. It looks like almost like an analog nub in the center. And I did grab a Switch controller, and I think it'll be fine. I was putting my thumb where it is.
It is odd that they
don't have the third handle.
Sure.
But then again, a lot of people don't fucking like that third handle. So
sure. And there's tons of people that have not new old stock. They have old controllers, and there's lots of aftermarket solutions for the N64 nowadays. There's modern N64 controllers you can buy. So like that. So to me, that doesn't matter. I don't need an 8-bit DOT controller to experience it. I have plenty of regular N64 controllers. So like I said, I'm excited about this. The FPGA, according to the article, the system has been in work for years. That's obviously most of that's the FPGA to make sure the FPGA is up to code. The terms of the pricing, I hope it's still in the same range, the 200 to 250 range. As what did the duos cost us that are on the way, which we'll get to?
I think they cost us at the time
the 250.
I thought it was cheaper, or maybe they upped the price before the pre-order, because I think they announced it at $199, and then I don't know. Whatever you took out of my paycheck, this is what they cost.
I got you. I ordered.
They are on the website at $250.
I pre-ordered.
I know the analog pocket prices went up. I think with the way the pricing is going, I'm gonna guess that they will announce this at $250. I can't see it being any cheaper.
I would think so. It doesn't have a disc drive to put in.
I don't think that's gonna matter though. I think once you get into people's minds that it's over $200, I know that the pocket was that because it has a screen and all that. Sure. I know the Duo has a disc drive, but I think once people are used to paying over $200, I don't think they're going to drop back down to their old pricing.
Oh no,
I think it'll be $250.
I'm just saying, I don't think it'll be like $300. I think $250.
Oh no, no.
I think it'll land at $250, and I think that'll be, most people will be like, yeah, I think that's fair.
Some people may sneer at me for this, but personally, I've always felt like, outside of the crazy shipping, I've always felt like the base price that they give most of their mass produced units, basically the Super NT, the Mega SG, the Pocket, and the Duo, I think they've all been reasonable.
Sure.
For what you get. And then especially when you compare like something like the when you compare something niche like the Duo with what it would cost you to get a modified system,
sure,
an original system that would do what that does, the prices look very reasonable.
Yeah, and people are going to say, well, you can get, there's like the Eon Gaming HDMI upgrade, there are other ways, there's kits you can have to make your N64 you know, upscale it for a modern TV. But again, having an archival quality console all in one, out of the box, a commercial quality FPGA, we assume, with 100% compatibility, that appeals to me.
Let's not forget, you know, I mean, it's unspoken, but this will be cracked, and then it turns into a flash card as well. So you'll have your system and your player all in one if you load it up with your ROMs. Like, you're good. You're going to be good to go.
Sure. If it gets cracked, you're saying, like, you can just put the ROMs.
It will get cracked. I mean, they all get cracked. But sure. Yeah, exactly. So this one is not quite the same, I think, as, like, the Duo, where it is genuinely a price-saving, you know, a money-saving proposition. But I still don't think it's going to be that too far out. You know, you get an N64 in really nice shape right now. I'm going to guess 80 to 100, and then you're going to be paying, you know, anywhere from 100 to, I think some of those HDMI kits are still really expensive. Mm-hmm. Price-wise, it evens out. It's not bad.
Sure. Well, I guess with the caveat that this is you know, region free versus, you know, an N64.
True. That too. Although making your system region free is a matter of taking a piece of plastic out.
Sure. Get the pliers in there, just snap it off. Like you can with the Super Nintendo for Super Famicom games.
Oh, you literally can just open it up and there's like a gray plastic tray. You unscrew it and take it off and boom, you're region free.
Sure. So like I said, I think I'll be in for this. I have everything but the Mega SG that they've come out with. I have a Mini NT, but I haven't really played with it a lot. And obviously the Pocket, we both loved that. And so other things they announced. At the time, Analog Duo shipping end of 2023. There you go. I forgot.
Well,
when the
I mean, it was always said to be shipping in 2023. End of. So I guess we can expect what, December. I'm not going to hold out hope for November.
Sure. Analog pocket adapters are on target to ship by end of 2023. There you go. I still got to probably get in on that to make, you know, to have a basically Turbo Express and have a Lynx, you know, in my hand. Analog OS 2.0 will be released by the end of 2023 with open FPGA display mode support. I don't know what that entails. I haven't kept up with the Analog OS.
I think stuff. That's going to be more for the Pocket, and I think that's more Pocket oriented, because I think that's where a lot of the Analog OS stuff is. The Pocket is, all of their systems seem to be pretty standalone, but the Pocket definitely seems to be like the FPGA development
sure
home. Within Analog, and it makes sense.
Sure.
What I'm curious about, you know, that I think we've talked about before, is what's going to happen with the Duo. Are we going to see cores for something like a PlayStation? Can we? What's the speed on the disk drive? Is it variable? I'm going to be really interested in seeing if the Duo can kind of become what the Pocket is in terms of
For disk-based
breaking out into more systems.
That's interesting. I would think that.
I don't know enough to say that that's possible. I mean, for all I know, that disk drive could make it very restrictive to do any of that, but I'm curious.
I would think that now that we're approaching mid-90s stuff, we're following along with, you know, Analog's products, starting with, you know, the mid-80s, and now we're getting to mid-90s. I would think that would be a smart one to do next. Do the original PlayStation, I think.
Yeah, that's what I want. So the thing is, I like the Analog products that I buy mostly because I actually have the physical games to play on them, and I want to play them in a better way, whether it's in my hand or on a TV with the Pocket or the SG. If something were to happen where they could do a PlayStation, they did a PlayStation, or if a PlayStation core came out for you know, the Duo, that would be probably the first time where, just to admit it out loud, that I would be excited about, specifically for cracking and loading up, so that you don't have to deal with a whole bunch of CDs that get scratched, this, sure, that, and the next thing. Like, that would be the one where I actually would, like, day one, I'd be like, all right, let's rip this open and get it going.
Or obviously the other one would be the Saturn. Do a Saturn. PlayStation has a much larger audience, but it's not like a hardcore sort of following like the Saturn is.
Well, sure. I mean, as time has gone on, the Saturn, because of its not obscurity, but because of its kind of like also ran nature, that does kind of increase the cult aspect of it.
Or if they say, screw it, we're going to blow this out, they do a PS2/PS1 core, you know, and then just have that as an all-in-one and just do it like that.
I don't think they would skip the step just because I feel like PlayStation 1 might not be as confusing as something like the N64, but I have a feeling it would be a time-consuming one to do. But again, I don't know this shit. I don't know. Sure. I'm just talking out of my ass.
Sure. Like, I don't know how much part of the PS2 core, because obviously it has the emulation built into it for PS1. For
PS2. PS2 did not use emulation. It's hard. It's hardware.
Oh, that's what I mean. Okay, so it's hard. So yeah, so that'd be part of the core. So you're basically doubling up the work all in one.
Yeah.
On the PS2. That's what I mean. Like you're not repeating. It's not two distinct products at that point. You know,
yeah,
it's
even
like,
on the PS3, PS1, and most people don't know this, all PS3s will play PS1 games, and I believe that's 100% hardware. Mm-hmm. The first round of PS3s, PS2 was, I believe, hardware emulated. It had the emotion or hardware run because it had the emotion engine in it. The later ones used emulation for the PS2. But I do believe PlayStation 1 has always, at least in the Sony systems, it's always been done via hardware.
Sure. So we'll see what comes, because now they're doing one console a year about, it seems. They're releasing like one a year. So I'm not saying another one's going to come out, you know, in 2025, but it seems like they're
obviously... Well, the Duo and the Pocket were announced the same year.
Yeah.
I mean, the Duo, is the year the Pocket was announced, the Duo was announced much like the 3D is announced now. You got the it's coming, but you didn't get the pre-order information, because the Duo was pre-orders were only earlier this year, weren't they?
Oh, was it like January or February? Or was it late last year? The past year. So we're on a track for like one product a year, which means that it's almost guaranteed that there's another FPGA, at least one in development that on their team for the next product.
Well, yeah, I mean, as they work through these 80s and 90s systems, they got to think of what they're doing next, because there is, you know, technically a finite number of products they can create in the range that they're doing now.
Sure.
So I'm interested in how far they'll go with it.
Yeah, PS1, we have the Saturn. If they ever want to try to do a Jaguar one for those hardcore Jaguar fans, you know, and then you get to the 2000s, you get the Dreamcast, which obviously there'd be a big audience for the Dreamcast. And then we'll see if the people involved in the company still want to be doing it in 2030. At that point, it's the Wii FPGA console coming out. Hey, one day that might be a thing. We'll be 78 years old, but that might be a thing one day, you know, with the upgraded motion bar. So anyway, so like I said, I'm excited for it. I'm on board for it. Even if you're not, we can still have fun with it.
I mean, I'd love to check it out. I know that it's one more that's out there for someone else to get.
Sure.